Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tell me a story. Folklore and Irish Tales with Eddie Lenehan. Iha Hauna is nearly on us, and in another week it'll be here. Now, Samhain was much before now respected as a time of the dead and a time of the fairies. Nowadays, it's a time still for children to have fun. But you look at the shops today and what you'll see is mainly junk. All of the witchy kind of stuff and, as I say, mainly plastic junk. But there was a time when, before our celebration of Samhain, went to America and came back to us in the form of all the kind of junk we see. It was a serious, serious time of year. It was the going of summer and the coming of winter. Samhain was the last day of summer, or the first day of winter, you could say. That was the time of year when farmers had to have all their crops finished with. It was the start of the dark weather. Well, dark weather was here before that, but you could say it was the official line between summer and winter. The dark days were upon us. And it's still true, of course, but the customs associated with Samhain, they have nearly all faded away. For example, if you told children, or if you told their parents now, that this was Ihena Spridana, Ihena Bukhi, the night of the fairies, the night of the spirits, would they know what you were talking about? More than likely not. They'd be thinking of witches and the rest, broomsticks. But there were no witches in Ireland. In Gaelic Ireland, there was no such thing as witches. That came from Scotland and places like that, east. In Gaelic Ireland, there were no witches, so where did those kind of customs come from? They might have come back from Salem in America, where they burned them. But in Ireland, it was still serious matter, because in those dark, dark nights, long nights, well, if the fairies were out, and they were supposed to be out of every fort on that night on their travels, you'd be better off not to go near those forts on that particular night. Because remember, people did believe in the fairies, and strongly. And you'd be surprised how many people still do, and still wouldn't go near a fort on such a night. And what about the dead? Would you go into a graveyard on Iha Hauna? Of course, many people would. And to say their prayers for their own good people that had died in years past. But most people that preferred to say their prayers at home around the fire. The old people, that was. Nowadays, I sometimes wonder, do people say any prayers at all? But who am I to judge? Because you can say your prayers to yourself. But different times, different night. But there was also the funny side of it. It was a night for, at home, fun. I remember the snap apple. When people didn't have the money for all the things you can buy in shops today, all the throwaway junk. When people didn't have a great lot. But when people did have what they had out of their gardens, they had apples. If you look behind you there out that window where you're sitting, you'll see my apple trees. And there's a lot of apples on them yet. God, I must collect them because all I've been collecting so far are the windfalls. There was a great crop of apples this year. And some of those apples were used in the simplest of way. Get a tub of water or a bucket of water, whatever you like, and get down on your knees. And after filling the bucket of water with apples, and you had mighty crack around the floor, putting in your puss into the water and trying to get your mouth around the apple. Not as easy as you might think when an apple is bobbing around in water, but you had mighty splashing around on the floor. Would that be allowed today on the fancy parquet floors that people have in their fancy new houses? I'd be doubtful about some of them. But I tell you this, if some of the parents saw their children enjoying themselves as much, they might be inclined to allow it. They might be inclined to allow it. But then again, you see, families have gone so small. The enjoyment has gone in that sense. There was 9 children in my father's family. 9. There was a fun fair in itself inside in that kitchen. And the kitchen in the old house is still there. And I bet you there was fun in that kitchen on Iha Hauna. And in many, many another kitchen like it, up and down the length and breadth of Ireland. But most of those are gone now. But the fun and games are still remembered. Think of the snap apple. All you needed was an old string hanging from the roof, hanging from something on the ceiling, and the fun you'd have trying to get your teeth onto that apple, without hurting your teeth, of course. And it cost nothing. It cost nothing. But remember, there was also the more serious things for example, trying to divine the future on that night. Trying to divine who you might marry. And again, all you had to do was use the things that were available from the garden. For example, nuts, hazelnuts, plenty of them at this time of year. Put them into the fire. And remember, to be open fires, most people had at the time. Put them into the fire on a piece of a shovel. And watch the way they would hop. If put 2 of them in, put names on 2 of them, we'll say the names of 2 people that were about to get married or who hoped to get married, and if they hopped apart, those 2 wouldn't last long married. If they stayed together, those 2 people would stay happily married. Things like that. Things like that were used. Practical people used practical things, whereas nowadays people have money to buy everything they like. Most people have. And so all those customs are forgotten because you can buy your so-called ready-made customs. I don't know which I prefer. I think I may be looking back at what I remember, but maybe that's sentimentality. Maybe that's sentimentality. Look, the children of today, looking back, all they will remember is the stuff out of shops. And maybe they'll remember that in due course with as much fondness as we remember something different. So people make their own memories. Now, when I'm up here in Crusheen playing cards, occasionally I'll hear the phrase, when a person is very, very lucky and have had a great run at the cards, which you can have, without cheating or any cards or a strange animal. The deck of cards isn't called the Devil's Prayer Book for nothing, because, by God, it can treat people in strange, strange ways. It can make you or break you. But I sometimes hear the phrase when a person gets a great run of cards, God bless it, somebody'll say we're under the briars. And that little phrase, there's an awful lot behind it, because what it means is the custom going under the briars on Halloween night to get luck. Now, there was a story about this particular man, and we'll just call him, for the sake of it, Jack O'Connor. Common name, because he could have been anybody from any place. But there was this story about Jack, that he had been losing and losing and losing, like somebody doing the lottery who is addicted to scratch cards nowadays. You know, they get a grip on you. And this poor man, he was mad for cards, played, but he was losing and losing in pennies and pennies when times were tough. But a penny is a lot of money when you hadn't it. But he couldn't resist the playing. And somebody said to him, God bless you, Jack. They said, why don't you give him up? Give him up, he says. He couldn't give him up. It was as simple as that. You can't give up something you're addicted to. But it was coming up to Halloween. And he knew the custom. He knew the custom that if you go out at midnight and can find a briar that's growing in the shape of a, what would we call it, for want of a better word, a tunnel. You know, briars do, they grow from there, they grow, oh geez, you could almost see them growing. Briars are a bloody nuisance the way they grow. They'll grow and then they'll grow down into the ground on the other side if they're not kept checked. And if you can find one of those that has taken root again, in other words, a double-rooted briar, growing up from this side and down into the ground on that side again, if you can find one of those and crawl under it on Halloween night at midnight and make a wish in the name of the devil, you'll get that wish. That was always the old belief. But of course, who's going to do that in the name of the devil? Dangerous business, unless you're desperate. But he was. He had lost so much now in pennies and tuppences and threepences that it had all mounted up, and he was desperate. So he decided he'd try it. And a few days before, out of searching and searching, he had found a briar like that. So he had, on the eve, Halloween, he went, and lucky enough, it was a fine night, a moonlit night. And I suppose, you know, he felt like saying a prayer, but how do you say a prayer for safety when you're going doing what he was going doing? In the name of the devil. He got on his knees and he crept under the briar just at midnight, and out the other side of it, there were no thunder and lightning or anything that he might have expected, but there on the ground on the other side of it was a deck of cards. And he picked it up, got up, looked through it. And he went home with it to examine it further, and did. A deck of cards. And he was disappointed. After all his trouble, the big build-up to nothing. But anyway, he put it aside. And a couple of nights later, he was going playing to a particular house, because it was all house games that time. You know, people had no money for playing in pubs like they do now. But he took the deck with him in his pocket. And as it happened, you know, is there luck? Or do things happen by coincidence? Because at that particular house on that night, didn't somebody notice that a card had fallen and picked it up? And be jeez, didn't the fella that had dropped the card, when he accused of cheating, and they counted the deck, and wasn't there a card missing? Somebody else was cheating too. And of course the deck was flung to the corner of the room. And of course that time there wouldn't be decks of cards. They mightn't cost much, but a deck of cards, well, they were a scarce thing. And that's the reason why you'd often see a deck of cards tattered and tattered and tattered. It had been played with for years and years and years. They weren't easy come by. And here they were now with a deck of cards and one card shot. And what were they going to do? Go home? Scatter? No. It was only then that Sean, he put the hand in the pocket and pulled out the deck. Brand new deck. And they are looking. Holy God Almighty, where'd you get the deck? Beautiful deck. And the man of the house put out his hand and looked at it. A seasoned gambler. Flicked through it. Oh, grand deck. Perfect deck. Jesus, he said, where'd you buy that? And of course, Sean, oh, I wasn't saying in the market there. He says, the other day, and I bought that. And the lie. The lies had started already. Where was he picking them from? So I'll be gone anywhere. Anyway, they played. Fine deck. Grandest of decks. And Sean didn't win. You know, he didn't win anything out of the ordinary. But the games went on, and the game went on, and the games went on. But towards the end of the night, Sean began to win a little bit and a little bit more. And at the end of the night, he had won a couple of shillings. Oh, a couple of shillings. It wasn't an outrageous fortune that time, but it was nice and handy to be the price of cigarettes for the following day and the couple of days after. And he was pleased with himself, and nobody thought more of it, except they were saying, God knows, you know, Sean, nice dick, nice dick. And the next night that he was out, he brought his dick, and they played with that, rather than the old tattered bit of a thing they had. And the next night, and the next, and he won, and he won, and he won. And he was getting embarrassed. And he tried to lose a couple of nights just to not, in case the bloody thing had spread, the news that, hey, people would be putting two and two together and coming up with five and said, Jesus, there's something wrong here. But they didn't seem to. Nobody seemed to think the more of it. Only that they got this lovely dick. And the other thing is, it didn't seem to be getting any of the more tattered or stained as the nights went on. And it would, you know, because people used to have a tea in houses. They'd be given a drop of tea and the dick would be plonked down the table. That's how dicks got scarred and tattered and stained and all the rest of it. But anyway, time went on and time went on. And eventually, the games became longer for some reason and went out in the night and on and on. And wives began to complain that men weren't coming home when they should come home, because up to this, fellas would be home by 11 o'clock at night. This wasn't gambling, even though they call it, we'll go on gambles. This wasn't gambling in any sense of the word that we'd understand it. And fellas were staying out until midnight. And a few wives started to complain. And more wives started to complain. And some old ladies took the news to the parish priest. And of course you know as well as I do that parish priest in those days they were the king of the castle and their own parish was their own fiefdom. So we got the parish priest called Sean and says, come here, I'm hearing rumours. You have a different kind of prayer book than I have. Give me a look at that. Ordered him. My God, Sean wouldn't. And Sean didn't. And Sean legged it out of the parish. And of course that only confirmed for everybody there that we're after being robbed. There's something suspicious here. Sean went to Dublin to shorten the story. Went to Dublin where he had a relation, but he had no other friends. But the next thing they heard was that, oh, he was staying with a relation in Dublin, but had taken up playing cards. And more severe cards than before, he had taken up playing poker. No, which none of them in this leg of the woods had ever played. They used to all play 31, 35 or the old game. But he had taken up playing poker above in Dublin and was making a small fortune with this new deck. But faith ex high, the parish priest sent to the bishop above in Dublin, and I suppose to the archbishop. There was a boy above there who was working by the power of the devil and to put the screws on him. There was a dick at the prayer book above there. There was no ordinary missile. He had to be got rid of, taken off him. They tried. Sean, he heard the news and he legged it over to London and made a bigger fortune there by the same prayer book. And he was playing there, and I suppose they sent the word there, it followed him and followed him, and he had to go to France. And he went to Paris, and by the Lord God Almighty, he skinned him there with the same prayer book. He was invited into the court of the king himself, Louis the 16th. So that'll tell you it was before the revolution. 17-something this happened. But in any case, he played there. He played there almost until the revolution itself. He became promoted to being one of the nobility by dint of this same prayer book. But in any case, he got old. He had every luxury that royalty could provide with the power of the prayer book. But naturally, at last, every man's end must come. And I suppose when the end was coming, he kind of got uncomfortable that maybe the lad who provided the prayer book might be coming to collect his dues. So he sent for the priest. And when the priest came and heard about the holy or unholy deal that was made on the Halloween night all those years before under the briars, he said, "I'm afraid," he says, "you have a bad bargain made, and I don't know, can I help you?" And Sean begged, of course, naturally, like any man would. He didn't like maybe the place he might be going to. So the priest said, "I'll do my best, but you'll have to hand me out that dick." And of course Sean did. He had him under his pillow, the cards, handed him out. And so the priest gave him absolution, or I suppose conditional absolution, the best he could do. He was a kindly man. He didn't like to see anybody lost to the lad below. So he did what he could, said the prayers, and I suppose that put Sean a little bit at his ease anyway. The prayer book, the deck was given over to the priest. It was inside in a golden box, which could be afforded by Sean at the time, and the priest opened it up, and there it was. And he turned up the first of the cards, and surprise, surprise, what was on it? Nothing. And the second one? Nothing. And the third one? Nothing. And all down along all the 52 cards, nothing on the back of any one of them. Where you'd expect the 10 of clubs, the ace of spades, the 9 of hearts, not a single thing on any one of them. All of them were blank. And he turned the last of the cards, and there, where you'd expect the joker, you know what was on it. The devil's face, looking up, laughing at the priest. And the priest just blessed him, and he disappeared in a cloud of smoke, and the cards in a blaze, like that. I can't tell you where Sean went, but all I can say is that any man who ever tried to go under the briars on Halloween night at midnight and make a bargain like that might be better off not to. Because the bargain you'll make isn't likely to be for your good. Now, one of the customs, if you want to call it that, or one of the dares, because there were lots of dares associated with Halloween. You'd dare a person to go to a haunted house, or you'd dare a person to go to the graveyard if they were brave enough, or you'd dare a person to go to a fort. All of those kind of things, considering the night that it was, a kind of a spooky night, an eerie night anywhere, where you might meet anything. You might meet the fairies, you might meet a ghost, you might meet one of your dead relatives, or you might meet a dead enemy, somebody you had wronged. Anything might be walking on that night. So it was a night that people were careful about. But that's the reason why people used to dare people to do this or that. Especially a boastful person. A boastful person that was always, "I'll do this, I'll do that. You know, I'm a braver man than you." Well, if you are, here's your chance now to prove it. The night is the night. Now, it was always said in some parts of the country, especially, that fern seed, the seed of Unrahinach, a fern, was very, very, very powerful because they don't come out that often. And if you could catch a fern seed when it fell, and it only fell, some people said, on Halloween night, at the stroke of midnight, and if you could catch it when it fell, it would give you the power of invisibility, that you'd be able to be invisible, now not for good, but for all kinds of bad things, like stealing and plundering and making yourself invisible for those kind of means and ends. Now, of course, to get it, there was the problem, because it was reputed that as it fell, if you were next or near it at that time, or you might get it, but of course there'd be things of the dark that would be trying to keep you away from it. Now, there was this fella in West Cork, down near Clonakilty, and his name was Owen O'Sullivan. Well, bad crowd, the O'Sullivans. It's infested with him, I believe, down there. And he made up his mind, because the boys used to always be at him, you know, oh, you're a brave man, you're a brave man, you'll do this, you'll do that. And he was the kind of a man, of course, that when he had a few pints taken, he'd be boasting that he would do this and would do that. And of course, they got sick of it. You're right. No. One of the old fellas knew about the fern seed and said, right, I'll explain to you something you won't do. And he explained that if you collect the fern seed on the night, 12 o'clock, and he said, to make it all better, he says, I know where you'll get one. And of course, you could know damn well by the twinkle in the old fella's eye. He was an O'Leary. And there was some kind of a feud between the O'Learys and the O'Sullivans, something that had happened on a fair day down in Roscarbury a while before, drink involved, of course. And here was his way now getting back at Sullivan. So he got in here. He told him where the fern seed was, just beside the graveyard. Not such a nice place to be, maybe, on Halloween night at 12 o'clock. But your man didn't give a damn. Owen, he was afraid of nothing. Yes, of course, we'll find out now. So anyway, he went. But what he didn't know was the fern seed thing was true. And if he had done his research a little bit more, maybe asked people who might have known, such as the local schoolmaster, or maybe the priest, or people like that, they might have told him, look, leave it be. That man Larry, he's noted, and he's not for your good. And they might have told him also that the only way of getting the fern seed without too much trouble is... Now, the plates that time, in some places, they used to be made of pewter. That metal that you might know the composition of it better than I do, but pewter plates, they're still there, and you'd still see them. They're kind of a collector's item now, but you had to have 9 of them, and one under the other, under the other, under the other, and the last 2 of them you had to put paper in between the last 2, and at the stroke of midnight be waiting. And as the fern seed fell, the power of it was that it would go right through all those pewter plates, and the 2 bottom ones, it was the sheets of paper that would catch them and stop it falling to the ground. And as it came to the last plate, the sheet of paper, you could grab it there. You could grab it there and wrap it up on the sheet of paper. But like I said, all of whatever was around would be there to stop you getting that. So Begatti said, I don't care what's around. I don't care if the devil from hell was there. I'm going to get that because, of course, to have a fern seed and maybe get rich as a result. Begatti says, I'll be there. And he was there, outside the graveyard at 12 o'clock on Halloween night. There wasn't the sound. And he knew where the fern plant was. He had been told by O'Leary where it was. All that you need to do now is be there, and he had his plates. underneath the fern seed plant. But the plant where the fern seed was going to fall, and he hoped it would. But he had examined it beforehand, and it was genuine article, or looked like it. And at the stroke of midnight, it fell. And down through the first plate, an amazing thing to see. It was a bright night. Oh, he had no lights or nothing. It was a moonlit night. Second plate, third plate, fourth plate. Dolly, Lord God, a blacksmith inside a welding shop today. You wouldn't see a thing like that. Fourth plate, fifth plate, sixth, seventh, eighth. No, his hand was shaking now. In fairness, brave man that he was, by the Lord, a braver man than him. It's a wonder he didn't drop him. But he was so fascinated that he didn't drop him. He was watching and wondering, of course. No, Christ, would it go through his hand as well? But fair juiced him. And O'Sullivan, he held it. He was thinking of the wealth, I suppose, as well, because they have fierce mind for money, the O'Sullivans. Ah, he held it somehow, even though his fingers were warping now, wondering would it go through hand and all. But he dished up at the paper over the last plate, and what did he do? Only whipped it out, wrapped it up in the paper, and he was just about to leg it when... What in the name of God Almighty did he notice? Inside the graveyard wall, there he saw the line of people, staring at him in the moonlight. Dead people, of course. And how did he know there were dead people? There wasn't a sound out of them, only staring at him. And he knew that there must be the inhabitants of the graveyard, because they had every kind of different clothing of the different centuries, some of them with knee breeches, some of them with more modern clothes, some of them with no clothes at all, I suppose, the more misfortunes that had been buried during the famine and only thrown into an old mass grave inside. There they were now, staring out at him, and a look on their face as if to say, you misfortunate man. They said nothing, but there was one tall man there among them, taller than the rest, and two dark eyes in him. They might have been eye sockets for all he could see. And now he should have run, and would have run, but he couldn't. And then they turned their backs and into wherever they had come, I suppose, into their own graves, or God only knows what. But it says then he ran. He went home, and I guarantee you his hands were shaking all right. But as soon as he got in, I suppose, to the light of home, lit the lamp, whatever, and he still had the thing in his hand, the little ball of paper, and he opened it up, and there was the fern seed right enough, and I suppose he got his courage from what he had seen outside is a different world. But anyway, he put it away and he went to bed. I don't know whether he dreamt or not, but he slept. And the following day, he said he'd try it out. And there was a man in the village that he felt that had robbed him before that, at a fair, wronged him at a fair down in Roscarbury. And he went into the man's house to confront him. The man didn't seem to see him at all. The man was a publican. And he went and he reached in across the counter into the till, took out the price of... He didn't wrong the man, he just took out the price of what he thought the man owed him and walked out. Never seen. My God Almighty, he says... And there's more to this than meets the eye. Well, that started him off. I'll shorten the story. It started him off, honest, there. It started him off on a mighty career of thievery and robbery. Again, as I say, Owen the Robber, he became known as Owen O'Grady. And he got rich out of it. He got rich. But one day he was below in Castletown Bear. Doing a little job. And he had just come out of a place where he had lifted another number of, I don't know, was it banknotes now or sovereigns, but it didn't matter, it was money. And he had brought it, seen by nobody. But he was walking up the street and a tall man accosted him. And who was the tall man? Except the man that he had seen, or that had seen him, inside the graveyard wall that night. And the man, he said to him, "Hold on a minute," he said. "Owen," he said, "you've come a long way," he said, "from the time that I met you last." And Owen looked and he said, I think I know you. Or do I know you? Or should I know you? "Oh, I think you should," he says. "I think you should. We met before." "Where? Where?" "Well," he said, there was a night when I was very close to you," he says, "very, very close to you indeed. And I think," he says, "you have property that maybe you shouldn't have." No, of course Owen thought he was talking about the money. But the man says, you have property that you shouldn't have, and I think you should replace it. Put it back where you got it." "I can't do that," said Owen, because said the man. "I'd put it back if I was you, and I'd put it back now," and he put out his hand. "I'll give it back for you," he says. And he just stared at him. "I'll give it back for you. Give it to me now, and we'll say no more about it. You can keep what you have, but give me that." And Owen only backed away. But the man followed him, and he cornered him against a wall. And he says, "I'll give you one last chance," he says. "For the sake now of the people that belong with me," he says, "you did a very shameful thing," he says, "in the view of all the people that were there with me that night. Give it to me," he says. "Put us to rest again, or if you don't." And he didn't finish. And Owen tried to get out beside him, but if he did, your man, like that, straight into his eyes, blinded him there and then. And your man only, he knew where to put his hands for whatever he wanted to, of course the seed, he took it. And from that day on, Owen kept his wealth, whatever he had, but he didn't keep his sight. He saw no more, and now your man went, I presume, back and took whatever was belong, maybe to them, because after all, it was near the graveyard. So once again, make a bargain like that on Halloween night. You might get rich in the short term, but you will not prosper in the long term.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.